We do get used to dry summers in this part of the world. Sometimes rain just won't fall between last spring and early fall, between late spring and early fall, I should say. Sometimes those periods are longer. We're in drought on both sides of the state line, extreme or severe in Oregon, slightly less in Northern California. Before the recent rains fell, we scheduled a look at drought effects and forecasts with a couple of people with expertise in the workings of the planet. We're fortunate to have them here now, a couple days after rainfall, so everybody's in a somewhat better mood, I would think. Eric Dittmer is a geologist, former professor, former director of environmental studies at Southern Oregon University, and the former water resource planner for RVCOG, the Rogue Valley Council of Governments. Eric, good to see you back in the studio, or in this studio for the first time.
Thank you. It is my first time. Nice to be here.
Good to have you. Ryan Sandler is the warning coordination meteorologist for the National Weather Service office in Medford. We talked to him last time by phone. Good to have you in the studio.
Happy new water year to you.
Oh, that's right. October 1st starts the new water year, indeed. I have to tell you, when I came back and looked at the fact that it hadn't rained yet in September, by Saturday the 29th, I was thinking, oh my God. But then it rained later that day.
Finally rained. Mm-hmm. And the fires are really just going down fast.
Good. It's good to know. So let's start with you. What are the conditions that tend to conspire to create a drought in the first place?
There are a lot of conditions. Drought is very difficult to classify. And we can look at meteorological drought as a lack of rainfall. And that's both short-term and long-term rainfall. And temperatures matter as well. You get more evaporation with higher temperatures. There's hydrological drought, the snowpack, mm-hmm. the groundwater, which is well water, reservoir storage and stream flows, and agricultural drought, where we're talking about the conditions of the pastures and rangeland.
All right, so all kinds of different categories, isn't it? It's not just one monolithic kind of drought.
No, it's like ingredients in a cake. There are lots of different ingredients, lots of ways to make it. And we're also looking at impacts. How does it affect people?
All right. So let's, Eric Dittmer, talk about what happens when drought goes on for a while. I mean, let's talk about things like soil moisture and ability of plants to grow and the things that happen when a drought goes on.
Well, our region already has to adjust to low and inadequate water supplies. We are in an arid region. There's less precipitation than evaporation potential, and it rains at the wrong time of the year. It rains in the wintertime, and we have the highest demand in the summertime. So as that progresses, and the cycles for precipitation go up and down, but the latest trends are, as Ryan said, are going down. Then you have soil moisture decreasing. You have stream flows decreasing, affected endangered species. You have basically stresses in vegetation, particularly our national forests. Trees lacking water become vulnerable to insects. So that long-term situation means that people need to be aware that things are not necessarily going to get better.
You mean just because there's a little bit of rain?
Correct. Mm-hmm. This last rainfall was, a quarter of an inch or something, and it really basically just said, oh, I remember what rain sounds like.
Right. Yeah, when it falls out of the sky, it's like, wow, I can't believe that. Are there feedback loops, Eric Dittmer? Does ongoing drought lead to more drought or make the conditions worse?
Well, it can, and I think the loop that's really being studied more is the impact of climate change and having increased temperatures. The trends are there that we have had the warmest, decade ever recorded, those kinds of things. The feedback then, if the soils dry up, then you have increased potential for fire, increased potential, therefore, for smoke. And that brings the presence of climate change indicators to the top of the list.
So, Ryan Sandler, talk about some of the things that Eric was just talking about. When you talked about how hot the summers have been, I know that there were some figures that came out of your office in Medford over the summer about consecutive days over 100 or something like that.
We haven't had too many above 100 this season because the smoke kept high temperatures down.
Right,
low temperatures were very warm, but the high temperatures, we were getting only to 98, 97, 99, but not 100 as much. But temperatures have warmed annually and in the summer. We're seeing warmer temperatures, and it's been drier in summers. The last 15 to 20 years, on average, has been drier during the summertime. We just had this year, Coos Bay broke a record 69 days in a row from June to August without a hundredth of an inch of rain. That's really unusual for the coast not to see rain. We've had record low stream flows. If you don't rely on a reservoir and you're on another stream, it dried up early or it's very low flow. And that can impact a lot of people. The impacts are so variable. If you look at the orchardists in the Rogue Valley, they got all their water from the Talon Irrigation District. Water flowed until about September 20th, and their harvest was over. But if you talk to a rancher who had alfalfa, they couldn't get the cuttings. They couldn't get the water on their land. So it really is highly variable of what type of impacts will occur.
So let's talk about the general conditions, too, because you and I brought in the same colored maps here, showing where the drought monitor is, the U.S. drought monitor for Oregon and for California. Jackson County, Josephine County, roughly in severe. As you head northward on a line basically along with the southern boundary of Douglas County, it tends to get extreme at this point. And so what are the differences between severe and extreme, for example?
I wish I could tell you exactly what the difference is. It's not just science. There's definitely subjectivity, and it depends on where the input is coming from. If you're hearing from a lot of ranchers in a particular area, you may decide to bump it up into extreme rather than severe. But overall, there really isn't much difference when you're in a severe or extreme drought. I mean, look at this year where we've had May 1st, we had half the snowpack in the Rogue and Umpqua Basin. Klamath Basin had a third of the snowpack, and the stream flows were so low. So, it's challenging to try to describe what level the drought should be.
All right. We have much more to talk about, obviously, on drought, and we can take your phone calls and emails as well about the subject matter. Join us by phone at 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Ryan Sandler is with the Weather Service. Eric Dittmer is a geologist and former director of environmental studies at Southern Oregon University. Back to talk more about drought and take input from you when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about drought in the region. It is still present on both sides of the state line, and we have a couple of people to help explain what drought is, what the effects of it are, and how we can deal with those. Eric Dittmer is a geologist, former director of environmental studies at Southern Oregon University, and former water resource planner for Rogue Valley Council of Governments. Ryan Sandler is the warning coordination meteorologist for the National Weather Service office in Medford. You can join the conversation, and I see a couple of people trying at the moment on the phones. 800-838-3760 by phone. Send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Eric, you wanted to pick up the point that Ryan was talking about just before the break about agriculture and how the effects are felt somewhat differently depending on what kind of agriculture you're involved in.
That's right. Ryan mentioned that the different kinds of agriculture, many depended on irrigation districts. The irrigation districts ended a little bit early, but not just agriculture. We take water for granted if you live in a municipal setting. Ashland, Medford Water Commission, for example. Public Works has done a great job so that you have water when you turn on the tap and you're not really sensing the drought right away. It depends on how you use the water. Fish come in a close last, and they're suffering from lower stream flows, higher water temperatures, and water quality goes down at that point. Recreation, those folks are seeing fewer reservations for rafting. Shakespeare's impacted because of higher temperatures. But the fact that anybody hauling water, groundwater is not great in this county, and so a lot of people haul water. You have just dedicated your 3/4-ton pickup truck to carry 200 gallons of water, and that means that you really do conserve.
I have some neighbors who do that. I've noticed that, the big black water tanks out there, and so they're big. Somebody comes in and fills them up from time to time.
Yeah, and Medford Water Commission, you can go to a dispenser and very cheap buy water and haul it home. But, I mean, hauling 200 gallons, think about how you would do that. So that water that they get is usually just for cooking and drinking, and they may not even have irrigation outside of their home.
Let's take some phone calls here. We have a couple people on the line waiting to go. Let's go to Malcolm in Grants Pass first. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange with Eric Dittmer and Ryan Sandler.
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm glad you're having this program. I love anything that has to do with water. I used to work for the USGS Water Resources Division for a very long time measuring creeks and rivers. And I've made an observation. I've been monitoring the creek I've been living on for 41 years. And I was really puzzled by what happened this summer. To go back a step, in 1977, the creek never got below about a quarter CFS, which is slightly over 100 gallons per minute, even though that was the driest year in history at that point. But this year, the creek got down to, in fact, the last few years, it's been getting down to around 10 gallons per minute, including this year, which surprised me because 2 years ago, the creek went dry for the first time ever. But this year, it got down to about 10 gallons per minute. And then we had that little tiny rain a few days ago, 0.18 here, and the creek rose overnight to over 100 gallons a minute. And I wondered, do you think that's just because of the trees stopped pumping water, or is it because all the people who have wells in the neighborhood have quit watering, or do you have any ideas? And have other creeks been responding that way?
Okay, good set of questions to explore. Thanks for that, Malcolm. Appreciate it. Eric, thoughts?
Well, first of all, checking with the water master, Siobhan Haynes, might address your particular geologic setting. If you have clays fairly close to the surface, then the precipitation doesn't infiltrate into the ground as much and runs off, and so that might explain the flashy nature of the stream that you've been monitoring. Your experience with the USGS is probably exceeds most folks. I used to do the same sort of thing out of Sacramento. Your efforts to look at your geologic setting, I think, is the key to seeing how that system that you've been monitoring so closely performs.
I had never thought about the geologic reasons for having flashy basins, but if you have a clay kind of something that's going to deflect the water, that's why the water will stay on the surface. If it was a sandier place, the water would soak in.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He wouldn't be having the same situation.
Correct.
So, Ryan Sandler, I want to turn to you then and talk about the beginnings of the projections for where we go from here. I mean, there was a lot of celebration over the fact that we actually got rain before the month of September was over, but I'm looking at clear skies behind you and a bright sunny day. So what are we looking at near term, and as you push things out as far as you can, what kinds of trends are you seeing?
The near term looks good. We could see a little bit of rain tonight, but not much. Most of that's going to be from the Cascades east. However, there's another weather system coming at us from the northwest on Friday night into early Saturday, and that one should bring maybe a quarter to a half an inch of rain. So I mean, that's not going to get rid of the drought. It's certainly going to pretty much put out the fires that are still smoking a little bit, but that's going to help. And we're in a cool pattern. We're going to see highs in the Rogue Valley in the 60s and lows in the 40s. So the cool temperatures combined with that rain, and then maybe another weather system, the computer models are showing a very cool and wet system next Tuesday into Wednesday. So we're getting into a more wet season pattern here, and it is October, so that's good news.
Have there been times in recent years that when you see a trend of, this is what Scott Lewis at Channel 12 used to call the storm door being open, but that you think the storm door is open and things are coming through, and then all of a sudden, boop, it stops?
Yeah, that seems to happen more than the other situation where the storm door just stays open. And we're looking at, I think, drier conditions mid to late October. And we also have a weak El Nino that's expected to develop. And that usually means a drier fall into early winter. So we're not as hopeful as we normally would be with that El Nino. But things could change. And for the whole winter, there's no real good prediction of what will happen with rainfall. If you look at a chart of rain every season, it's very variable. It's high, it's low, it's up, it's down, it's all over the place.
Eric's been keeping us honest and making sure that we keep this in the context of climate change. But one of the things we have talked about in context of climate change in recent years is the fact that it doesn't take much difference in temperature to make something that would have fallen as snow and then for be storable in the mountains for months fall instead as rain, which doesn't stay up there.
Correct. That snowpack is Mother Nature's storage device. Humans use dams and creating reservoirs. But that snowpack did allow slower melting and higher stream flows into the summer and even to the fall. And that's not happening as much. And a slight temperature change means that the snow level is higher. Below that, it's rain. And any extreme, in fact, we expect extreme rainfall flashes in the winter. And when it all falls at once, more runs off and is, you know, not available for future use.
We're going to invite, go ahead, Ryan.
Well, I was going to make a comment on the snowpack this season. What really did us in and caused the drought to develop was May. It was extremely dry and very warm, and that snowpack melted off. By June 1st, there was virtually no snow in the mountains. It had melted out 3 weeks early.
So if May had been slightly cooler, we might have had the snowpack last a little longer, potentially.
Yeah. If it had been wetter and cooler, it would have made a significant difference, and for fire season as well.
I forget. Did we get rain on the snow too, or was it just plain hot in May?
It was pretty mild in May. We didn't get much snow.
Mm-hmm. All right. A couple of people who probably want to get in on the conversation. I'm going to invite you to join us too as we talk about drought here with Ryan Sandler from the National Weather Service and Eric Dittmer, who's a geologist and a former professor at Southern Oregon University. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I think this is Rika in Grants Pass. I would have been disappointed if you didn't call, Rika. Welcome to the exchange.
Thank you. I would have been disappointed if I'd missed this.
Okay. What's on your mind?
We're in an irrigation drought, specifically city irrigation. They price the base price too low and the unit price too high to conserve water, and so we've been conserving water and drying out our countryside and our cities.
You have a particular theory about applying water to the landscape, Rika. Why don't you share that with us?
Well, it runs on the water cycle. If we throw water in the air, we get more rain. That's what we were doing for about 30, 40 years. We were changing the climate to cooler and wetter in this semi-desert. And since the 80s, people started talking about how we have to save fresh water, that it's a precious resource.
All right, so in essence, what you're saying is that if we use...
prices have gone up.
All right, so what you're saying is if we use water, we get water.
That's right.
Okay.
Especially for irrigation, because sprinkler irrigation, it throws the water in the air. You know, they say, half of it evaporates and that's waste. No, it's not waste. It makes rain, it cools the area, and pushes the water cycle.
All right, let's see what Eric has to say about this. Thanks for calling, Enrique. Appreciate it.
Well, the nuances of the way you irrigate land, we've progressed from flood irrigation, which allowed evaporation as well. The next level of improvement was sprinklers, which are more efficient. I'm not sure about how sprinklers then contribute to a subsequent rainfall. But now we're going into micro-sprinklers, drip irrigation, and we have our major orchardists here, at least in Jackson County, I'm not so sure about Josephine County, who are using very sophisticated techniques to save water because they are seeing that the potential for their irrigation supply isn't as guaranteed as it used to be.
I'm trying to think of a parallel to what Rika is talking about, though, and it sounds more like economic stimulus, where if you put more money out there, there's going to be more activity. I don't know that that's necessarily true with water, and I can see some doubt in your own face.
No. What occurred to me, and it's not so much for agriculture, is that cities who want to encourage their customers to save water have increasing rates the more water you use. The base rate is such and such, but if they use more than X number of gallons per month, the rate has gone up.
Okay, let's take another call from John and Vanita. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking drought with Eric Dittmer and Ryan Sandler.
Welcome back, Jeffrey.
Well, thank you.
This is something I'm really interested in, and it's kind of spooky, the thing about fire and, you know, really dead, dying, really messed up trees and brush. And I've been noticing this for a number of years now, and it's really getting to the point where some places, and I'm talking residential areas, I live rural, and that's usually where it's the worst. And you'll see, you know, sometimes clumps of trees, or just one, or maybe two or three of them along the edge of the road that are dying or dead, or, you know, going back to dying, they are dying, or they may be, you know, basically they're dead. They just, nobody knows it yet because they haven't fell down or blew up in fire. And what I'm getting to here is homeowners and people's property should really look at around them and look at this stuff, because they may be able to do a little preventative maintenance or work on it by following through with somebody that can actually tell them the tree situation, which they'll probably already know the thing's going to be dead shortly. It's already probably a fire hazard, because when they start dying, they become weak and they become more of a potential to go off and burn. And if the person gets ahead of it, they could, it's, you know, it's not anything anybody wants to hear. It's like your transmission blew up, you know, but it's a lot cheaper than having to build a house because it got burned down.
Okay, so keep an eye on your vegetation and figure out what it's going to need. Thanks for that, John. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Eric, which kind of gets back to a question and I had already written down, which was whether things get over droughts. I mean, if a rainfall year returns to more or less normal after several years of drought, I mean, does the ecosystem, do the living things within that ecosystem get over it, or are they permanently scarred from drought?
Well, it depends, of course, on long how that drought cycle lasts. And sometimes the expected rainfall that we have here in at least Bear Creek Valley is like 19 inches a year. And, you know, this year was particularly bad at only, right now, the water year ended with only about 11 inches of rain. And when you reach that point, then you start getting the push to have water managers get together and say, now what? But we've also had, you know, the year before, I think it was like 24 inches of rain. Year to year changes happen normally. The concern is that with what we've just talked about with raising temperatures, the cool nights are not as cold anymore, reduced snowpack, flashy streams, flashy rainfall in the winter. It looks like the long-term trend, whether you attribute it to climate change or not, is really there. We've had people who used to store skis in the bottom of the valley every winter and the front door, and they could go skiing. Not so much anymore. I mean, in fact, I don't know of anything that happened in any summer in the last couple of decades. The ability of the ecosystem to come back is pretty tough if you think about the forests. If a tree has struggled with lack of water, then gets infested with insects, coming back from that death cycle is pretty tough. So managing drought in the forest adds a complication that we haven't faced before.
Has the job of weather forecasters gotten harder, Ryan? I mean, are the oscillations greater? Are you seeing things that you didn't used to see? Things like Eric was just referring to, and you mentioned before, the warmer temperatures overnight.
In some ways, yes. It's always harder to forecast extremes. People don't go for it when the computer models are getting better and better helping us forecast, but it's still difficult to put a forecast out that's a record or near record. So in that respect, it has gotten harder.
And when I look at the map too, and I see the fact that the Eugene Springfield area seems to be in extreme drought, while the rest of the region's in severe drought. I mean, basically, if Eugene gets Medford's rainfall for a year, it's in drought, isn't it?
Yes.
The difference.
Oh, yeah.
Is, yeah.
Yeah. There, it's significantly wetter there. So yeah, it depends on your compared to normal is what determines the drought.
Just a couple minutes left, and I want to focus on things that a couple of listeners have brought up. Eileen in Eugene asks if we have any advice for ordinary citizens to help conserve water and energy, and that parallels an email from B. Notown Given, who wants to know if we recommend installing cisterns in backyards, for example. So what ideas would you guys offer in terms of ways in which folks can cope with the drought or think about ways to hold water back for when drought happens?
If you're in an urban area served by a city municipal water system, then you can go to that city, whether it's Ashland or the Medford Water Commission, which serves basically every other city in the Bear Creek Valley, at least. They have tremendous resources to help you. Ashland will provide low-flow shower devices and do an irrigation audit and buy your, if you reduce your lawns, they'll actually reimburse you for that, and Energy Star systems and toilet tablets that you can see whether the toilet's leaking. In the rural areas, there's a wonderful handout at the Water Master's offices on managing your groundwater. If you're on groundwater, if you're on a well, you are your own public works director. And it really falls on you to deal with water conservation and checking for water quality. But there are quite a few steps that just are common sense. Some people have catch their roof rainfall, and it's their water.
Yep.
But it's a little bit problematic because in a quarter-inch rain, if you have a rain barrel, it fills up right now.
Right, it does. California recently liberalized its laws, too, to allow people to catch their rainwater, too. So we'll have to end it there. I want to thank you guys for coming in to talk about drought and what we have to look at now, what we have to look forward to. Eric Dittmer is geologist, former director of environmental studies at Southern Oregon University, former water resource planner for the Rogue Valley Council of Governments. Ryan Sandler, warning coordination meteorologist for the National Weather Service office in Medford. Thank you both for being here today on The Exchange.
Thank you. You're welcome. It's my pleasure.